Iran rejects claims about granting the IAEA access to individuals as part of the agency's inspection of the country's nuclear program. Police and protesters clash in Greece during demonstrations over a train crash that left nearly 60 people dead earlier this week. China announces a rise in its annual military budget amid growing tensions with Washington over a wide range of issues. I'm Behrouz Najafi. Welcome. Iran has rejected claims about granting the International Atomic Energy Agency access to individuals as part of the agency's inspection of the country's nuclear program. The spokesman for the Atomic Energy Organization of Iran says the issue was not even raised during a visit by the IAEA chief to Tehran. Behrouz Kamalvandi added that there was no discussion about unrestricted access to the alleged three undeclared locations where the agency claims to have found uranium traces either. He stressed that Iran's agreement with the IAEA during Rafael Grossi's visit complies with a law passed by the Iranian parliament to counter sanctions and to develop the country's nuclear program. As part of the agreement, Tehran said it would voluntarily allow the agency to conduct more verification and monitoring in case such activities are needed. Upon arrival in Vienna, Grossi claimed that the agreement includes access to people of interest.
The stalemate between Tehran and the three remaining signatories to the Iran deal over reviving the 2015 landmark agreement has once again brought the Director General of the International Atomic Energy Agency, the IAEA, to the Iranian capital. Rafael Grossi held talks with a number of Iranian officials, including President Ebrahim Raisi, Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian, and head of the Atomic Energy Organization of Iran, Mohammad Islami. During a joint press conference with Iran nuclear chief, Grossi said his meetings in Iran took place in an atmosphere of cooperation.
The atmosphere is an atmosphere of work, of honesty and cooperation, and I think this is it is the most important thing. Our dialogue will continue today.
The IAEA chief also expressed hope that his meetings with Iranian officials would produce good results.
We are working hard. What I can tell you is that our teams, we have been working. Now we are taking recess to come and talk to you. But we are working hard in order to have good solutions today.
He also hailed his meetings with Iranian authorities as constructive.
By having a constructive discussion like we are having now and having good agreements like I am sure we are going to have, we are going to be paving the way for important agreements, and this is my hope.
Iran atomic chief also addressed the reporters. Islami said the Islamic Republic has no reservation about advancing its nuclear program, adding that the country will not give up on its national interests. Regarding claims about uranium enrichment, Islami said the IAEA's report has confirmed Iran has not enriched uranium beyond its declared 60%. He added the issue has now been resolved between the two sides. Islami underlined that the meetings show Tehran and the IAEA maintain professional relationship.
The visit by the head of the IAEA comes as the UN agency is accused of bias when it comes to Iran's nuclear program. Tehran is critical of the agency's political approach and says that the UN watchdog is under the influence of Israel, that's not even a party to the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty.
The recent visit by the IAEA chief to Iran comes as many throughout the world have raised doubts over the impartiality of the UN agency. This comes to the spotlight, especially when the UN nuclear watchdog has always failed to address questions about the agency's inspection of Israeli nuclear sites. During his press conference, Grossi argued that Israel is not a party to the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, or NPT, and therefore the agency cannot technically inspect Israeli sites. Given that, one would argue that the IAEA, along with the international community, have failed to pressure the Israeli regime to become a member of the agreement. After all, the regime in Tel Aviv possesses more than 400 nuclear warheads, which can by default be an enormous threat to the entire world. In the meantime, Iran has been critical of the UN agency for acting politically in cases related to the technical issues of the country's nuclear program. Tehran says the agency acts under the influence of certain countries, but the IAEA claims otherwise.
The IAEA has not been and will never be a political tool of anybody. I, as Director General, I am independent. I am under no country's instructions.
Iran's concern can be clearly felt in President Ebrahim Raisi's remarks when he met with Rafael Grossi on Saturday. President Raisi said Tehran will continue to cooperate with the International Atomic Energy Agency if the IAEA preserves its independence and defend the rights of the Iranian people. Raisi said Tehran expects the agency's activities not to be under the influence of certain world powers who pursue their personal interests. The president called on the IAEA to express realities about Iran's nuclear program without any partiality and based on professional behavior. This is significantly debatable when one argues that the International Atomic Energy Agency has even failed to condemn terrorist attacks on Iranian nuclear sites as well as those targeting Iranian scientists. This is why the pressure is always coming from entities like Israel that are not even a party to the NPT. The pressure is also coming from countries like the United States that they themselves are in possession of hundreds or maybe thousands of nuclear warheads and a threat to humanity by nature.
Damascus has condemned a visit by the top general, U.S. general, to an American base in northeast Syria. The Syrian Foreign Ministry says that the visit was illegal and a flagrant violation of the country's sovereignty. On Saturday, the U.S. Chairman of Joint Chiefs of Staff, Mark Milley, made the unannounced visit to assess the nearly eight-year mission there. Washington is stationed force and equipment in the northeast of the country without the consent of the Damascus government. The Pentagon claims it's fighting Daesh Takfiri terrorists there. Damascus says the illegal deployment is tantamount to occupation and aimed at backing terrorists and plundering Syria's natural resources. Former U.S. President Donald Trump admitted on several occasions that American forces were in the Arab country for its wealth. Israelis are continuing their protests against the far-right cabinet headed by Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Protesters are particularly angry at Netanyahu's so-called judicial reforms that they say fosters corruption. We've delved deeper into the issue in our news review program.
It's time now for our news review segment where we take a look at one of our stories in more detail. More than 200,000 people rally across Israel for the ninth straight week against the policies of the new Israeli far-right cabinet. The protests turned violent in Tel Aviv. Israeli forces fired tear gas and water cannon to disperse the demonstrators. They also blocked some streets in an attempt to contain the rally. The protesters are angry at Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's proposed judicial reforms. If approved, the legislation would increase the cabinet's influence in choosing judges and limit the powers of the Supreme Court to overturn the cabinet's decisions. Critics argue that the legal changes will foster corruption and bring diplomatic isolation. The reforms are the cornerstone of Netanyahu's cabinet, an alliance of ultra-Orthodox and extreme right-wing parties which took office in late December. Joining us for more on that is Moti Abu Musaba, a Palestinian political activist in Gaza City from the besieged Gaza Strip, and also Mick Napier from the Scottish-Palestine Solidarity Campaign out of Edinburgh in Scotland. Gentlemen, welcome. Moti, if I could start with you, in your opinion, where can this unrest by the protesters or the settlers, to be more precise, lead to, in your opinion?
First of all, thanks for having me. It has become a matter of fact that the Israeli population nowadays is experiencing a severe political deadlock, which is emerging with having this kind of Israeli far-right government and authority and office. A major part of this problem and this crisis actually refers to that many of the Israeli ministers engaged and involved in this Israeli government have corruption crises against them in the Israeli courts. So from their point of view, having any kind of reforms in the judiciary system actually would enable them to evade any kind of accountability or any kind of sentences regarding those corruption files and cases. So we are in front of an emerging crisis inside the Israeli occupation. Part of this crisis actually refers to the personal interests of those Israeli ministers. And this is actually a tiny part of the adverse consequences that this Israeli government, far-right government, has these kind of ramifications and consequences are not about the Palestinian people only. It would actually touch also the Israeli occupation itself.
Right. Mick, what's your take on all this? The president of the Zionist entity has warned that the regime is on the brink of collapse, social collapse, and possibly faces a violent collision.
Well, commentators over the years and over the decades have often pointed out that if the Zionist bloc wasn't determined to crush the Palestinians and didn't have a so-called enemy in the Palestinians, then there would always be the danger of a civil war. Look, when you've invited me on before to your program to comment on events, I have to say I often had difficulty in thinking of what to say, because week after week and month after month, we saw the same thing. We saw killings, we saw occasional massacres, we saw full spectrum criminality against the Palestinians. And the Israeli Supreme Court made this possible. The Israeli Supreme Court is being portrayed by the demonstrators and by pro-Israel elements in Britain and America as a bastion of democracy. But it was the Israeli Supreme Court that legitimized torture, legitimized house demolitions, collective punishment, all sorts of crimes, shoot to kill, and so on. So from the point of view of the Palestinian people, this is a demonstration within the Zionist bloc, and it's a demonstration by people who support Jewish supremacy but don't want to see a dictatorship by Netanyahu over Jews. So people talk about what's going on in Palestine, Israel at the moment as the appearance of fascism, as the appearance of a democracy. For Palestinians, this is absurd. They have always lived under a dictatorship. But for some sections of Jews, they are afraid that perhaps just a little bit of what's been dealt out to the Palestinians might be dealt out to them. The loss of civil liberties. I think it's Ben-Gvir, who's the police minister, or Smotrich, I'm sorry if I've got that wrong. But somebody like him in charge of the police will not stop at the massacre of Palestinians, but will commit abuses against dissident Jews.
Okay, gentlemen, thank you very much indeed. The very interesting points raised. Let me thank our guest. Matiya Abu Musaba is a Palestinian political activist joining us from Gaza City in the besieged Gaza Strip. And Mick Napier, thank you very much, as always. A Scottish Palestine Solidarity Campaign from lovely Edinburgh. That brings an end to another edition of the News Review.
Now moving on, opposition supporters in Tunisia have taken to the streets in defiance of an official ban on demonstrations against President Kais Saied. Rallyers broke through a police barrier in the capital Tunis to rally in the city's main street. Police had already warned them their demonstration was illegal, but said that they would not stop them by force. The demonstrators demand President Saied step down. The rally was held after some opposition leaders were recently arrested as part of a crackdown on prominent critics of Saeed. They've been charged with conspiring against state security. In Greece, clashes have broken out between police and protesters over a deadly train crash that happened earlier this week. Thousands of protesters gathered outside the Greek parliament in Athens. The protest was called by students, rail workers, and public sector employees. Train and metro services were also paralyzed by strike action. A passenger train collided head-on with a cargo train in central Greece on Tuesday. That was the country's worst rail disaster, killing at least 57 people, many of them students. The government attributed the crash to human error, but unions say it was caused by a lack of maintenance and faulty signaling. China's military budget has risen by 7.2% this year, slightly outpacing last year's increase. The national budget, released on Sunday, showed that some $224 billion has been allocated to military spending for the year 2023. Beijing says that armed forces should work to carry out military operations, boost combat readiness, and enhance their military capabilities. This year's hike in defense spending marks the eighth consecutive single-digit increase. The upswing in the defense budget comes amid growing tensions with Washington over a wide range of issues, including Taiwan and the South China Sea. And this brings to the end of this newscast from Tehran.
Diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Limelight. Hidden violence by police forces in Western countries is far more than developing countries, including those in West Asia and even Africa. This may be related to the complexity of the nature of crime and the definition of criminal behavior, as well as the police's view of these countries to humans as useful creatures for industrial society. One of the countries in which police commit lots of violence is Britain. In recent years, there has been many news about it. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. Tehran Times wrote in this regard, "In every community, the police are considered to be the symbol of peace and security. There are few societies in which citizens are afraid of seeing the police, and this is rooted in the name of the police, which comes from the Greek word polis, which means city and civility. A police officer is actually a law enforcement officer, but in the modern world, especially in recent years, some policemen's behavior towards citizens has been very harsh, in violation of basic human rights. One of the countries in which police commit lots of violence is Britain. The name of the British police today is associated with violence, rape, and abuse. With a simple search on the internet, you can find the most harrowing stories of British police that look more like crime books. Some instances of police violence are organized and some others are a result of the spirit of violence among the Metropolitan Police Forces. Today in England, a Metropolitan Police Officer, even if he is off duty, allows himself to handcuff a young girl for not complying with the restrictions of Corona, put her in his car, rape her, and kill her. That girl was none other than Sarah Everard, who was killed in March 2021, and the police officer was none other than Wayne Cousins. Another case in this regard is the case of David Carrick. He is a serving officer in London's Metropolitan Police, who has admitted to 49 offences, including 24 counts of rape over an 18-year period. David Carrick appeared at Southwark Crown Court in the British capital on January 16, 2022, to plead guilty for 4 counts of rape, false imprisonment, and indecent assault relating to a 40-year-old woman in 2003. The UK's PA Media News Agency has reported this. According to CNN, on January 16, 2023, at the Old Bailey Criminal Court in London last month, Carrick admitted to 43 charges against 11 other women, including 20 counts of rape, between March 2004 and September 2020, according to PA. A series of recent scandals has shed light on what the UK police watchdog called a culture of misogyny and racism in London's police service. The Metropolitan Police Service Commissioner Cressida Dick resigned from her post in 2022 after a damning review by the Independent Office for Police Conduct issued 15 recommendations to change policing practice in the country. London's Metropolitan Police are now investigating as many as 1,000 sex offences and domestic abuse claims involving approximately 800 of its officers, the force's commissioner Mark Rowley admitted recently. Rowley said in an interview with UK media, "That's 1,000 cases to look at. Some of those will be things of no concern in the end when we look at them, because it will be an argument overheard by neighbors where inquiries show there is nothing to be concerned about." Women's rights organizations call for an inquiry into the Met following Carrick's case. UK domestic abuse charity Refugee called Carrick's crimes utterly abhorrent. Refugee tweeted recently, "When a man who has been charged with 49 offenses, including 24 charges of rape, is a serving police officer, how can women and girls possibly be or feel safe? This is an institution in crisis. That Carrick's pattern of egregious behavior was known to the Met and they failed to act speaks more loudly than their empty promises to women," UK organization End Violence Against Women tweeted. It added, "Solidarity with the victims and all who are feeling the weight of the traumatic details being reported." The British Women's Equality Party tweeted, Metz knew about the allegations for 20 years. They did nothing as a serial rapist abused his power. They are complicit. Misogyny will never be stripped from the police without a nationwide statutory inquiry. The Favacit Society, which campaigns for gender equality and women's rights, said on Twitter, "Any act of sexual violence is a disgrace, but it is particularly harmful when, yet again, these crimes have been perpetrated by a person who has additional responsibilities to keep the public safe." Along with women, the groups that have suffered the most from the British police are the black people and those with Asian origin. 1,833 police have died in police custody or following police contact in the UK since 1990, British media reported on September 27, 2022. The killing of Chris Kebbah has led to renewed calls for justice as black people continue to be disproportionately targeted by police violence. Father-to-be Chris Kebbah, 24, was unarmed when he was shot through a car windscreen in Streatham Hill on September 5, 2022 by a Met police officer. Metropolitan police officers are four times more likely to use force against black people compared with the white population, new figures suggest. The Met used force 62,000 times in 2017 to 2018, with more than a third of incidents involving black people. Techniques such as verbal instructions and using firearms are recorded. The Met police said the proportionate use of force is essential in some circumstances to protect the public and often themselves from violence. Shadow Home Secretary Diane Abbott said the disproportionate use of force is discriminatory. Police forces in Britain have been required to keep a detailed record of each time an officer used force since April 1, 2017. According to the data, a black person in London is four times likely than a white person to have force used against them by a Met police officer as a proportion of the population. London's black population at the last census was 1,088,447. In 2017 to 2018, the Met used force 22,989 times against black people. Based on population figures, the use of force was equivalent to once for every 50 black people in Greater London and once for every 200 of the white population. This is higher than in other police forces covering large urban areas such as Greater Manchester and Merseyside.
Ocean of Dua.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Hello everyone, brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. During this month of Sha'ban, the month of Almighty Allah's mercy and pleasure, we will try to offer a glance into some of the passages of the whispered prayer of Sha'baniya, or the so-called Munajat Sha'baniya. Thank you in advance for staying with us. We'll be back again after listening to some parts of it.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Ilahi, lam yakun li hawlun fa'antaqil bihi an ma'asiyatik إلا في وقت أيقظتني لمحبتك وكما أردت أن أكون كنت فشكرتك بإدخالي في كرمك ولتطهير قلبي من أوساخ الغفلة عنك.
Brothers and sisters, as you were previously with us, we were discussing this excerpt of the great whispered prayer of Sha'baniya. إلهي لم يكن لي حول فأنتقل به عن معصيتك. My Lord, I had no strength to desist from your disobedience. إلا في وقت أيقظتني لمحبتك, except when you awaken me for your grace because of your love and your favor. In this regard, we were discussing the concept of tawfiqullah, one of the most important aspects of which is mahabba and love of the Almighty Allah. We said that in the Holy Quran, in the traditions, we have many different wide range of elements involved that could be embarked on in the path of salvation, in the path of reaching the Almighty Allah for the wayfarers. But the most important of these elements is the element of love and mahabba for the Almighty Allah. Now, we said that as the traditions suggest, this is the most important one, the most powerful one, and this is actually by far the one that could be counted as the most firm one. Now, the kind of sweetness and yearning and eagerness that is caused by worshipping the Almighty Allah out of love is indescribable. Indeed, such a sweetness and pleasure dwells in the hearts of the friends and awliyaullah. It is not something which occurs to them at times and goes away at other times. When the sweetness of the love of the Almighty Allah sits and settles in the heart of a person, then such a heart is the one inhabited by the love of the Almighty Allah. And Allah shall never punish such kind of heart that is inhabited by His love. And the kind of heart that has tasted the sweetness of His love. This is so important that Imam Ali alayhi salam says, O Allah, by your might and glory, I have loved you with a love whose sweetness has settled in my heart. And the hearts of those who confess your oneness cannot believe that you hate your lovers.
Alhamdulillah, we have been given the blessed opportunity of witnessing another month of Sha'ban, which is the month of Allah's mercy and pleasure. Hafaftahu bir rahmati war ridwan. Allah has covered this month with His pleasure and mercy. I thought it might be good to have a little introduction to Munajat al-Sha'baniyyah. The late Imam Khomeini in many places on several occasions emphasized on this Munajat. And in one of his sayings, he said that there are many important mystical points that one can understand from the Quran and whispered prayers of Imams. And then in particular, he mentioned Munajat al-Sha'baniyyah. And he said, philosophers, mystics may be able to understand some aspects of these whispered prayers. But if someone wants to really understand, must be a person who has himself achieved a high level of closeness to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala so that he can have a taste, he can have an experience of what he says. In another place, the late Imam Khomeini said something very important. He said, this Munajat al-Sha'baniyyah is one of the whispered prayers that if someone pays attention to it and follows it and reflects on it, he can reach somewhere. He can achieve some levels of perfection. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to forgive us in this month of forgiveness and to be pleased with us in this month of pleasure. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to bless us, our families, our community, all humanity with His pleasure, with His reward, with the coming of Imam Mahdi ajjalallahu ta'ala farajahu sharif, with forgiveness, with being able to remain always on the right path.
About the importance of this issue, Imam Ali ibn al-Husayn Zainul Abidin alayhi salam says, regarding this steady and established state of the divine love, he says, by your might, O my master, O Allah, even if you drive me away, I will not leave your door, and I will not cease to compliment you because of what I have come to know of your generosity and kindness. This Imam has understood the depth and true meaning of Almighty Allah's mahabbah, the meaning of Almighty Allah's love. He has understood what kindness and generosity the Almighty Allah possesses. And this is such a servant that even that says, he himself says, O Allah, even if you drive me away, I will not leave your door. I will not cease to compliment you, even if I see you driving me away. This is one of the most eloquent expressions describing the profundity of love and its abiding in the heart of the servant, such that it would not disappear from it or change even if his master were to drive him away and distance him from his proximity, from his door, from his mercy. And far it is from him, subhanahu wa ta'ala, that he should do that with a servant in whose heart his love has dwelt. When a true servant experiences the taste of love of the Almighty Allah and the pleasure of intimacy with him, he would not prefer anything over him. And Imam Zain al-Abidin, the leader of the lovers, says, O Allah, who can have tasted the sweetness of your love, then wanted another in place of you? And who can have become intimate with your nearness, then sought removal from you? So the reason behind the difference of the people in relations to their goals and views about life, it could be, or at least to a great extent, is that they are deprived of the pleasure of the Almighty Allah. Otherwise, those who have experienced such a pleasure do not seek anything else in their lives after that kind of experience. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us in this episode. We ask the Almighty Allah to set us among the guided ones and the people of the straight path. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
شعبان بجمالك جلالك زهوبان والعالم يقلك أحبك يا شعبان شعبان بجمالك جلالك زهوبان شعبان بجمالك جلالك زهوبان والعالم يقلك أحبك يا شعبان والعالم يقلك أحبك شعبان بجمالك شعبان شعبان يا شعبان يا شعبان يا شعبان أحبك يا شعبان يا شعبان أحبك يا شعبان
Iranian Radio Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The administration of US President Joe Biden is under pressure to drop the charges against WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange. Many human rights organizations have expressed their opposition to the extradition and trial of Julian Assange in the United States. But the Biden White House has not paid any attention to these requests. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. Joe Biden has been charged with hypocrisy for demanding the release of journalists detained around the world, as he continues to seek the extradition of the WikiLeaks founder, Julian Assange, from Britain. As a candidate in 2020, Biden released a powerful statement about the importance of press freedom. Joe Biden said, "At least 360 people worldwide are currently imprisoned for their work in journalism. We all stand in solidarity with these journalists." On Friday, 20th of January 2023, the campaign aimed to pressure Joe Biden to drop charges against Julian Assange, move to Washington, D.C. for the hearing of the Belmarsh Tribunal, the gathering of legal experts and supporters named after the London prison where Julian Assange is being detained. Organised by Progressive International in partnership with the Wau Holland Foundation, it was held at the National Press Club close to the U.S. Capitol building, which houses the U.S. Congress. The hearing was held in the same venue where Julian Assange in 2010 exposed the collateral murder video showing U.S. aircrew gunning down Iraqi civilians, the first of hundreds of thousands of leaked secret military documents and diplomatic cables published in major newspapers around the world. Collateral murder is 39 minutes of unedited leaked video footage from a gun cam that had caused severe embarrassment in Washington as it showed the U.S. military drone attacking Al-Amin al-Thaniya, a suburb of Baghdad, and killing 12 innocent Iraqi civilians. The Belmarsh Tribunal co-chairperson, Sireko Horvat, said, "President Biden is normally advocating freedom of the press, but at the same time continuing the persecution of Julian Assange." He also warned that continuing the prosecution could serve as a bad example to other governments around the world. He said, "This is an attack on press freedom globally. That's because the United States is advancing what I think is really the extraordinary claim that it can impose its criminal secrecy laws on a foreign publisher who was publishing outside of the United States." Currently, Julian Assange faces 18 charges over WikiLeaks' publication of classified documents, most of which were leaked by former U.S. Army intelligence analyst Chelsea Manning. Manning has stated that she acted on her own initiative in sending the documents to WikiLeaks and not at the urging of Assange. She was sentenced to 35 years in prison but was later released after former President Barack Obama commuted her sentence in 2017. The Bloomberg News Agency has also covered the same story and tells us more. The campaign to free WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange is being stepped up following support from the presidents of all major Latin American countries. The politicians have sided with the Free Assange campaign in urging U.S. President Joe Biden to drop the charges against Assange and set him free. Assange is being held in Belmarsh Prison in London, England, as he continues to fight being extradited to the United States. Brazilian President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva said, "Julian Assange needs to be defended by all of us who love democracy, who love freedom of the press, freedom of trade unions, who love freedom of organization." WikiLeaks editor-in-chief Christine Hafenson and WikiLeaks ambassador Joseph Farrell have held a series of meetings in recent weeks in Latin American countries, including Mexico, Bolivia, Brazil, and Argentina. The Mexican president raised the issue of Julian Assange at a recent summit with Joe Biden and has used his daily briefing to highlight his continuing unjust detention. President of Argentina Alberto Fernandez said, "For justice to be done, the United States needs to drop the charges against Julian Assange and put an end to the ongoing extradition proceedings." Mexico's president Andrés Manuel López Obrador said, "If Assange is taken to the United States and sentenced to the maximum penalty, we must begin the campaign to dismantle the Statue of Liberty. It is no longer a symbol of freedom." Meanwhile, Australian Prime Minister Anthony Albanese has been approaching U.S. government officials to persuade them to drop the espionage charges filed against Julian Assange. Anthony Albanese said recently that he had raised the issue of the continued detention of Julian Assange in meetings with U.S. officials and was seeking to bring the matter to a close. Albanese said he would continue to advocate for Julian Assange's release. American officials claim his journalism endangered America's national security with the release of classified documents in 2010. Julian Assange's supporters say he's a hero victimized for exposing U.S. war crimes in places like Afghanistan and Iraq. If extradited to the United States, he would face a sentence of up to 175 years in a maximum security prison. The American newspaper The Hill has also covered this story and tells us more. Major news outlets like The New York Times have called on the Biden administration to drop charges against WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange. The Guardian, Le Monde, Der Spiegel, El País all joined forces with the New York Times to oppose the charges against Julian Assange, insisting that publishing the material WikiLeaks has released is not a crime. The media outlets wrote recently, obtaining and publishing sensitive information is a core part of the daily work of journalists. On 28th of September 2010, the five major news outlets collaborated to release excerpts from 250,000 documents obtained by Julian Assange in the Cablegate leak. The material, leaked to WikiLeaks by the then American soldier Chelsea Manning, exposed the inner workings of US diplomacy around the world. The editors and publishers of the five major newspapers that first published those revelations insisted that the prosecution of Julian Assange is a direct attack on media freedom. They wrote, "This indictment sets a dangerous precedent and threatens to undermine America's First Amendment and the freedom of the press." They added, "Obtaining and disclosing sensitive information when necessary in the public interest is a core part of the daily work of journalists. If that work is criminalized, our public discourse and our democracies are made significantly weaker." The letter concluded by saying, 12 years after the publication of Cablegate, it is time for the US government to end its prosecution of Julian Assange. Recently, supporters of Assange gathered to form a human chain outside the British Parliament, the House of Commons in London, to demand his release and an end to an attempt by the United States to have him extradited to face criminal charges in the US. The protesters, who held posters reading "Free Assange, End Extradition," "Journalism is not a crime," and "Prosecute war crimes, not Julian Assange," formed the human chain that stretched from the House of Commons perimeter railings and led towards nearby Westminster Bridge to the other side of the River Thames.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.